Timo Murphy. I'm the CEO of the rail operations at PRASA.
Langi Montana, Group CEO of PRASA.
I'm Ophetum of Kim. I'm the spokesman for PRASA.
Stephen Tung from SA News, the government's news agency.
Bianca Capizoria, Weekend Argus.
Shoaib Nation, content advisor to the committee.
Pilot Gobo, I'm the secretary to the committee.
Claudine Adams, committee assistant.
Cornelius Schnarrenberger, representative of the General Consulate of the Federal Republic of Germany.
My name is Carl Pudusek. I am the representative.
The
record
can say if you can just the mic.
Kelson Doucet from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Lungisim Schlanger, ENCA cameraman.
Paula Charles, ENCA.
Yannick von Reisberg, SABC.
Trina Sampson, Business Day.
Thank you, honorable members and our guests. We are the Select Committee on Public Services, and we're going to be getting the presentation by PRASA on rail investment program, and hopefully we will hear how they actually focus their delivery in provinces, in urban poor, rural poor, women, youth, and people that are differently enabled. CEO, over to you, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues, Chair, as we did at the beginning, I'm our delegation. I'm accompanied by the CEO of our rail division, Mr. Musango Mofi. He's the man who runs Metro Rail and the long distance train, Shosholo Zamei. And of course, our media liaison officer, Mr. Moffat. I think at various stages as we go, particularly Musango will, when we talk on the rail side, make his own comments as well. Chair, of course, I don't intend to cover each and every slide. As you can see, we've got a long presentation, but to answer the specific question on the rail investment, on how it impacts on the key objectives that we've outlined and some of our key priorities. Chair, I'll go to the key issue of the mandate of PRASA. I think that this is captured in the Legal Succession Act of 1989, but amended in 2008, and it provides for primarily three specific issues, or rather mandates, that we must provide urban rail commuter services in the public interest. By urban rail commuter services, we refer to the metropolitan centers of South Africa, and that's what Metro Rail is all about, and to provide long-haul passenger rail services, that is the intercity long-distance services, and thirdly, to provide long-haul bus services, and that is our subsidiary, Autopex, which is operates Translux buses as well as city-to-city buses. Chair, the mandate, of course, goes beyond just the transport side. The Act also provides that we must generate income from the exploitation of assets acquired by PRASA, which means the assets that we control, land, stations, we need to develop those so that we can generate income for our company. And of course that we need that we contribute to, my apologies, Chair. Thank you.
the burden of the program.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for that. Chair, that is the key mandate of PRASA, but when we move on, you see our structure there is a group structure, and you see that we were essentially a group which operates in three specific areas. Rail is the main one, with property as the second area of activity, and that. So if we summarize who we are a company that operates bus, rail, and invest in property, as it were. Some of the key assets we have, Chair, we of course the total rail network in the country is 22,000, that is excluding what we call the branch lines, mainly in the different provinces that are not as active in the main lines. The commuter rail network, where Metro Rail operates in the metropolitan areas, is over 2,000 kilometers of electrified track. We've got over 4,600 Metro Rail coaches. We've got over 1,000 coaches for the long distances pulled by 124 locomotives. We of course have over 700 buses which we operate in the country. And of course, if you look at the passenger numbers, the Metro Rail passenger trips, there are just over 600 million passenger trips every year. And as you know, in Metro Rail, when we count the trip, we count them double because people go to work and back again. So that is why we're using not passengers but passenger trips. It is to reflect that. The bus services, of course, is intercity bus services. So 3.1 million passengers travel on that. And the long distance, it moves 3 million passengers, but I think we'll show that in the course of the discussions that we've since rationalized that service by over 50% because it's a service that is not funded, unfortunately, and it's a service that from, if you talk about connection between the metropolitan areas and our rural areas, it should be playing quite an important role. But at this point in time, it's not funded, putting a lot of pressure on our ability to do that. Total number of employees is 16,000 employees we've got, and of course we own direct 370 stations, but we operate just over 500 stations. But some of them are still in the books of Transnet. The value of assets, Chair, I think that we're just busy now with the audited financial statements yesterday. I think that number has increased quite significantly. Where we have over 28 billion rands worth of assets, and of course most of these are the book value or historical values that are not actually reflecting a market value of these assets. If we were to unlock the value of these assets, of course we are continuing with the valuation of the assets, particularly what we call investment assets, where we generate a lot of income on some of the properties that we own, and we've seen that growing quite significant in value. So the assets are quite valued on that. When you look at that fact sheet, Chair, it tells you that we're sitting on a huge asset, which I think the committee and parliament at large is correct to say it's an asset that should be used to the benefit of the country, as it were. So just to talk, because at the heart of it, today we are not going to focus much on the bus side. We're going to focus primarily on our rail investment. And I just want to just reflect a bit on the role that rail can play. I know that our railways haven't been able, both freight and passenger side of railways, haven't been able to support some of the key activities for one simple reason, that for over a period of 35 years, as a country, we haven't invested in our railways. Since the 1980s, there's never been any meaningful investment in railways. I think in our briefing to the committee last year, we drove that point very strongly to say, if you know you do not invest in railways, you're going to have a major problem. I'll show when I look at our strategy and some of the major drivers as to what is the major challenge that we face today. But Chair, if you look at many countries, take China as an example. they've used rail to drive major social and economic development. So rail can play that role with the right kind of investment, the right kind of training, skills development. It can play quite an important role in connecting the cities and the rural areas, as it were. So it is a major instrument for social and economic development. In other countries, they even decentralize the manufacturing on rail to make sure that poor regions of the country have got some kind of economic activity as it is. If we talk about South Africa, even after the Union of South Africa was formed in 1910, one of the major things to connect the four republics that were there, you'll see that rail was very important to forging that national unity as it is. So if you talk about economic unity, articulation between different parts of the country, the rail infrastructure, fixed as it plays quite an important role in that. If you want the much needed links between rural and urban areas, rail is very important for that, and it's something that is very crucial. If you want an efficient movement of goods and people, and I think, Chair, you know that when you talk about moving bulk cargo, rail is the one that is that. You can't put the bulk cargo like coal and all of those things on the roads. Yeah, they belong on the rail side of things. If you want to move 40,000 people, you can't move them, for example, on taxis or buses. Trains will have to perform that role. So if you talk about that kind of investment, that's very important. If you talk about investment in rail infrastructure, you'll see that you've got a multiplier of four. For every rent that you get, you'll be able to generate 5 rents in economic activity and the massive jobs for that. Because of its technical and engineering nature, if you want to create skills in the economy on a much larger scale, rail investment in skills is quite important. Rail plays an important role because it's not only the 16,000 employees who work for us, but the many companies that supply us who create quite a lot of jobs. So there's quite a lot of direct and indirect jobs that we create in the economy. If, of course, because of the distances in our country, particularly people with the apartheid spatial planning, people living far from places of work, if you want affordable transport, I think that you ask everyone here at the Cape how much they pay for their monthly ticket, you'll see that they don't pay over 200 rands, some of them, in some of the classes, because it is designed to be affordable. For every monthly ticket you pay, you effectively pay for 3 weeks, and the 1 week you travel for free. Of course, a monthly ticket is more cheaper than a daily ticket, because we're trying to incentivize people to buy and to get into seasonal tickets. But affordability is a key issue that is there. If you want to talk about an efficient transport system, as you know, Chair, we don't have an efficient transport system in the country, because we find rail operating where bus or taxi should be operating, and vice versa. For example, you've got taxis transporting people from Johannesburg to Limpopo, as an example. 16 people in a thing. It's not an efficient way from moving people, from the costs that are involved. So I think that one of the major things is to ensure that we deploy a mode of transport where it can perform best. Taxis are good in terms of your short term, or rather short distances, pick and drop. No one can beat taxis on that side. They're designed for that, carrying 16 people. When you want the high volume corridors, rail is designed for that. One train, in one coach, we carry 180 people on a normal sitting capacity. But if you have a full train, it can take up to 2,000 people at a time. So it tells you that you can't on a Mabopane line, which moves every day over 60,000 people, and put taxis there, you're going to create a lot of congestion. So from an efficient transport point of view, that is very important. Rail, unlike the roadside, is fixed. But the fixed nature of rail gives you certain advantages from an urban planning point of view. Because if you don't want an urban sprawl where people just keep on, you build and you expand infrastructure that moves far away from the cities and everything, then you know that the rail can serve to defend what they call the urban form, where so that you don't have the urban sprawl, and that goes with some of the cities that you see. But of course, Chair, that the rail is regarded as a safe mode of transport, and I think that this time, let's of course extend our condolences to the people in Spain with the accident that they had. We've interacted with the rail operator Renfe on many occasions in the past, but Chair, with the right kind of investment and proper maintenance, rail is the most safest mode of transport. If you invest in the asset, you maintain properly, you train your people, then you know, because the very design of rail is based on safety. I think you can see that when a train moves, even if it's a long railway line, it's managed in terms of sections. Because that section, when a train moves in there, you'll see the signals or the robot at the back turning into red. It's basically telling you that it's occupied. That part of the network, no one can come in. So it's designed for safety. But it's assuming that it's well maintained, and we're investing in it as it were. From an environmental point of view, Chair, it's been proved all over the world that when you look at greenhouse gas emission produced by railway system, they're far lower than those produced by road and air travel per passenger kilometer travel. So there are many factors, there are many considerations that actually suggest that we should be investing more in our rail system moving forward. But what is the challenges with our railway system, Chair? I won't take much. Last year, when I addressed the committee, I spoke at length about what the problem is. Chair, let me repeat what the major problem is with our railways. Our rail infrastructure and technology has reached the end of its design lifespan. That is the main problem that we have. So it means we can't get more than what we are getting out of the current metro rail or socialism system. It has reached it's the end of its design life. We're just running it, of course. I always say to my colleagues that I think we even spend an additional, almost just over R1 billion paying just for the system to run, and its inefficiencies for the old system that is there. Days back to the 1950s, I think the cost of its maintenance is very high. And I think that is one of the major things that is there. And if you look at the next slide, Chair, in page 8, you'll see that our investment, as I said, for over 35 years, we've never invested. The last train that we have for Metro Rail was bought in the 1980s. These are the trains that you see running between Khayelitsha and Cape Town. These are the silver trains that were designed by the Japanese. And they were delivered there in the 90s. The silver trains that you see running there. They're very reliable, but the bulk of the trains we run, Chair, they were built at Union Carriage between 1960 and the 1970s. And this is the current fleet that you see running Metro Rail. And it can no longer take us back for what. I think if you look at the technology, again, that dates back to the 1950s, as it were. So the technology is old and inherently obsolete, as it were, with the average age of the fleet at 40 years, Chair. But if you go into the box, you'll actually see that more trains than those that are over 50 years of age, and those are due for retirement or scrapping, as it were. The slide just summarizes exactly what I had, that graph. I won't go much into it. It's showing the age profile of the trains. The next one, Chair, is very important because the green and I showed this slide as well last year, but it shows the difference between the metro rail train and the modern train that you have. The one that you saw in Spain or the Hull train, that is the difference. And when you look at the criteria of what defines a modern train in terms of mobility, security, safety, efficiencies and convenience, you'll see that Metro Rail failed in all the standards. The red suggests that Metro Rail gets red, whereas the other modern trains have got all those features there. We only have got one green there under Metro Rail. The Metro Rail 5M2A is the one that was built in Union Carriage in the 1950s, 1960s and 70s. It fails in all respects to meet modern standards that we're talking about here. So we'll never solve the problems of metro rail when you continue running with this fleet. It can't be efficient, it can't be reliable, and this is the story that we see from that particular problem. So Chair, how do we proceed, how do we solve that? I think that of course, when we were with the committee, we briefed the committee on some of the things we did since 2007 to 2010 in particular, but I just want to focus primarily on what we want to do. But in doing so, I just want to focus on the drivers of our own strategy, and I want to focus on one chair that is very important. There are many drivers of our strategy, including government policy, the government's economic goals, that drives the demand for rail. But one of the major things why it's important for us to modernize and invest in our railways is the issue of the rate of urbanization that is taking place. Chair, I think that if you look at some of the latest reports from the United Nations, it showed that one half of the world's population now lives in urban areas, a figure that is suspected to rise to 60% in 2030. Okay. So in the developing countries, over 2 billion more people will live in cities by 2030. What it does, it puts enormous pressure on urban, on transport infrastructure, on water infrastructure, water and sanitation, on energy demand and everything. But of course, it means there's growing poverty and inequality within our own cities as it went. To continue, Chair, you see that by 2015, there would be as many as 60 megacities, that is cities with more than 5 million inhabitants, together housing more than 600 million people. And as you can see, Chair, that there will be high densities within these cities, and the main challenge is going to be how we provide the infrastructure on energy, on transport, and other things to make sure that we respond to this major challenge Chair, I'll jump the other slide. I think it's a repeat. If you look at that slide that I have there, you see something very important there. The last census in the country confirmed the same trend about the movement of people into our own cities. And I think that is a major issue that is facing us in the coming years when we plan. I'm moving to the next slide, Chair. The next slide, I'll talk about it because this is the work that we have now been given us by government to do. In the government strategic infrastructure program, the presidential infrastructure coordinating committee has put all these different projects into different SIPs. SIP stands for Strategic Infrastructure Project. SIP 7, that deals with urban transformation, urban renewal. We've been given the responsibility to coordinate that. And 12 cities have been put into that program, Chair. That is in for example, in Gauteng, Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, Johannesburg, Sidibeng, we've got Mangaung, we've got eThekwini, we've got Msunduzi, we've got Buffalo City in the Eastern Cape, we've got Nelson Mandela Bay in the Eastern Cape. In the Eastern Cape, we've got Cape Town, we've got Polokwane in Limpopo, all these cities, 12 cities. What is important is that they account for 42% of the country's population. And we've been asked as PRASA recently that we coordinate interventions in those cities because there's a recognition of the point I've just been making that unless we provide the right kind of infrastructure, particularly transport infrastructure, water and sanitation, energy, we're going to have major challenges in respect of our city. So I think that we need to transform Metro Rail so that it has the kind of trains, the kind of infrastructure that will be able to meet the increasing demand in our cities. So why I'm saying that, Chair, is that we're not just trying to fix Metro Rail to address the problems about this capacity. As we try to change it from the old technology to modernize, there's now a growing demand that is different to even when it was first put in place in the past. So that slide tells you what we are trying to do, Chair. Now, what is our the BRASA strategy to respond to all of these issues? Chair, in our last presentation, we dealt at length how we are trying to stabilize the commuter rail system, the one that we call Metro Rail, because that is at the heart of BRASA. Metro Rail accounts make 70% of our own business. Many workers who go to work depend on Metro Rail. And the truth of the matter is that since 1992, Metro Rail has been in a very on a path of deterioration. It lost passenger numbers. Most of the trains were not working, and those kind of things. So our strategy that we asked to implement between 2007 and 2010, in particular, is that we put in place measures to save that company from collapse, and it was on the verge of collapse during that period. And that was our top priority, to make sure that Metro Rail doesn't collapse, because the cost of it the collapsing would be huge for the economy. But also it will mean it will shut down quite a lot of people from economic activity, from work. So that is very important, Chair. And I think that I want to say today that I'm proud of what we have done in this particular regard. Yes, Metro Rail, it still does not provide high quality transport services that all citizens expect, but I think as a company, Chair, it is not on the verge of collapse. And if there's one thing that we have done with the support and guidance from government, was for us to make sure that it doesn't fall apart. There are many workers, unemployed people who go to look for work, who rely on Metro Rail services on a daily basis. And I think that government realized that the cost to the economy, to our cities, of a system that has collapsed would be quite huge. So we're given money, at that time 18 billion rands, to say, go and ensure that we save this company from collapse. And Chair, I'm happy to report that we have achieved to a large extent that mandate that was given to us. Now what we're trying to do in our new strategy is to make a transition, moving from a focus on stabilizing Metro Rail or saving it from collapse, towards changing it into a company that will deliver high quality services. I think that is very important, Chair, so that the citizens have the kind of services across the country that they know that they're safe, they're reliable, people can go from home to work and arrive at work on time, the safety is fine, the comfort is right, and of course the accessibility of these trains in particular are quite good. So that is a change that we've been trying to do, we've been trying to implement. Of course, in the long term, Chair, we want to change BRASA itself, not only Metro Rail, to becoming a commercially viable entity capable of delivering those kind of services on a sustainable basis. Chair, if you look in our railways, based on the old policy of apartheid, rail and buses were subsidized, taxis were excluded from that. But we are trying to build an entity that can generate a lot of resources from its assets moving forward without having to. Yes, you're still going to require a subsidy, because the urban poor in particular will still need to be subsidized to go to work, because if you do not do that, the cost of doing that, I think that will be quite huge. The government policy says that we need to ensure that poor households do not spend more than 20% of their disposable income on transport. So if they live long distances, they live far from the cities, then of course you're going to have that problem that is there. So there will be a measure of subsidy, but we want to have a public entity that is able to meet all its obligations just based on the exploitation of its assets at its disposal. What are the key pillars of that strategy to achieve that, Chair? We want to of course improve on the quality and reliability of rail services as it stands. And I think that the Chair will distribute an additional piece of document that the CEO of Rail in the course of the presentation will talk to. We call it a 5-point plan about what we are doing currently so that Metro Rail services continue to respond. So that is one issue. We are not saying because the system is old, we must wait for the future. We are still doing quite a lot to make sure that it runs and it runs reliably. But the most important thing, which is the focus of our discussion, is to invest in new capacity, Chair, for new modern trains, and I'll talk about that. Signaling and telecoms, train control and operating systems, speed gates, and of course expanding the rail network in the country. And of course we want to unlock the value of assets so that we can achieve financial sustainability. So those are the three things that we are doing at the strategy level to deliver, Chair. And I want to move to the capital investment. I won't touch the first, as I said, that the CEO of our rail division will comment on that, about what the five-point plan is trying to do currently as we roll out the investment that we have. Chair, I think I'm just going to summarize the page 20, slide 20, 21, and 22. They provide the numbers, until 23, Chair. They provide the numbers, the capital investment that PRASA is involved in at this point in time. Chair, from 2013 till 2015, we'll be spending 32 billion rands as Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa to improve rail services, to invest in infrastructure. I think that is very important. Just to keep the current system running. But you can see on slide 20 on top there that the first amounts on the new trains has already been allocated. This is the amount at the top, Chair. The 4 billion rands will increase to 5.2 billion rands. Initially in the last budget, the amount was here, Chair, because at that time we thought that we may spend, but I think that with the procurement processes that we have run well in time and efficiently, of course we start to spend that money in real terms in 2014 with the building of a new factory for the production of trains, as well as the related activities that are there. We continue to spend a lot of money here on refurbishing and upgrading the current fleet. As you can see in that the accelerated rolling stock program is there on the second line, we will spend 2.6 billion rands, or rather 2.5 billion rands over that period of time. I mean now 2013-2014, we've committed 2.9 billion rands onto that program, Chair. So it's been quite a huge investment to make sure the current fleet keeps on running. You see the amount of money we spend, Chair, on station improvements and station upgrades is one of the major things, so that we create modern stations for the people of South Africa. I think that is one of the major things we're doing that around the country. The signaling thing, Chair, you can have new trains, but if you don't have a modern signaling system, you'll never be able to move trains, because signaling is what guides the safe movement of trains. If you want to move trains faster, quicker, if you want the train after every 3 minutes in the peak hour, you can't do that without the signaling system, because that is a matter between life and death. That is why you hear people say the signaling system is down, people have stolen cables. What do we do? People say, but move the trains. We approach it from the side of caution, that they rather stand, because a train is carrying, if it's carrying 1,800 people to 2,000 people, Chair, you don't want what happened in Spain to happen. So railway safety, like in aviation, is a major issue that we have to take into account. So slide 20 to 23, Chair, summarizes the massive capital investment that we have, that we are rolling out now, from as we speak now until 2015. And I'll go, Chair, I'll proceed now into the details of some of these investments for the benefit of the committee. So the first one, of course, is the buying of new trains for the country. There's no doubt that we're not saying that just buying trains will change everything, but change, there will never be a change without introducing a new stock in our rail system. So the buying, the acquisition of a new train, of new trains, is at the heart, is a very important step in the transformation of Metrorail. Yes, we have to retrain people, we have to invest in other things, we have to invest in our people, but at the heart of it is that people get into trains, and they must be the kind of trains that deliver that reliability and that comfort and safety. So when we briefed the committee at that time, I think it was before we even went on a procurement process, we spoke about the 123 billion rands that we are committing for buying of the new trains. I'm happy, Chair, to report that since the briefing, we've made significant progress in this area. We divided the 20-year program into two 10-year contracts. The first 10-year contract, Chair, has been awarded after very rigorous bidding processes that involve South African international companies. Chair, we have we want to, of course, in over 20 years to build 7,224 coaches. We'll build the first 3,600 coaches in the first 10 years. And we've awarded that contract for 51 billion rand to the Gibela Consortium, which is led by Alstom, which is Alstom is the French manufacturer that is involved in that process. I'll talk about some of the agreements that we've reached, Chair. I won't go much into the detail because my board is considering the entire agreement tomorrow, and as well as the BE part of it, which the Minister of Transport hopefully will announce on Thursday. So I won't go much into the detail, but I'll give the committee a sense of what we are. So, Chair, we are no longer talking about plans as we did last year. We've awarded. We are preparing to build a plant in the country, and we said that that plant is going to be in the East Rand because that's where there is a lot of engineering activity. We want to use this investment to stimulate. If we want to stimulate jobs and create lots of jobs, we want to ensure that the engineering side of things, our entire engineering sector is revitalized, and is currently concentrated in the eastern in the east of Gauteng in Ekurhuleni. And Chair, we've made that decision already, and we won't be using an existing facility. We'll build a new facility, Chair, completely new, modern facility. The reason we're doing that, Chair, is because of one thing. As you can see, that these trains are not imported. They'll be built in South Africa. 69% in the second year and 72% throughout of the components that makes a train will be manufactured and coming from South Africa itself. So these are not things that you're going to import. It will be trains that are built in South Africa, and we'll do that. This plant, Chair, is aimed at employing over 8,800 people, and the supplier site, which will be located in that industrial park, is expected to create just over 22,000 jobs. So we expect by the time this production is of these trains is unfolding, 33,000 jobs all in all will be in operation in this particular program. And we had concluded all the key negotiations with Alstom and Gibela to make sure that this becomes a reality. Chair, this slide here is very important because it basically summarizes the replacement strategy that we have. You can see that I don't know the color, whether the color purple in your slide here, it represents the new trains. Whereas the ones at the bottom, the other different colors, it shows our current fleet, the different trains that we've got. And these are the trains that will replace over a period of time as we introduce the new trains as we do. And let me emphasize, these are not trains for long distances. These are trains for metro rail, so that we change metro rail in the urban metropolitan centers of South Africa, which is linked to the economy. Chair, the next slide is going to provide some of the breakdowns, and I think that what you see, Chair, I remember when I was in the committee last year, we had the temporary design that we've done for the new trains, and the committee said, hey, this train doesn't look good, we don't like it. Chair, the train that you see is the train that is being built for South Africa. That will be built in this plant that will be built in the East Rand. Is the actual design of the train, and as you can see in the new slide, in the next slide, of course this remains a simulation, but it's exactly this train will look. There may be slight improvements on the look and feel, but that's the kind of train that will be running for everyone from our townships into towns. That's what we have, and you can see this is the inside, particularly of the trains. The different kinds of seating arrangements. This, of course, is a mass mover side, whereas the other one is a seating for express trains, and that will create in the country. Chedi, as I said, so this is the work that we have, and I think that we have concluded almost the procurement processes out of that, and the only thing that will be left with. After our board has considered and approved everything, it's for us now to go and finalize everything with National Treasury, and then we'll sign the contract and reach financial close latest 15 September this year, and then the process of producing the trains will then begin. Chair, let me then highlight just two things that I think is very important to note. Even though we are producing all these trains inside in the country, and I want to go back to one of my slides earlier on, which I jumped. It's very important that I explain one important so that members of the committee would understand. I want to go back quickly to the age profile of the trains. Chair, this slide. Now, the reason why I go back to this slide is very important, Chair. These trains here, these trains here, they're actually due for retirement. 2015, 2016. Now, even though we are producing all the trains here, we have now been exploring the possibility that 20 train sets, and 20 train sets can be produced outside of the country, so that we don't have the collapse of the system when these trains goes out. Because building the modern plant is going to be very important for South Africa. But that plant, it may take us almost up to 18 months to build. However, we need to add new trains on our system by the first quarter of 2015. So to avoid a situation where we can have a gap there, we then said that we may need 20 trains to close the gap that is there, so that you don't have then the system collapsing because we're waiting for new trains. So that is very important. We're upfront about it so that it's understood. But the trains will be built, as I said, in Ekurhuleni. Why we want to build a new plant here, it is in line with the government's industrial strategy. We want to recreate our capacity to build trains, not only for South African needs, but also for the rest of the African continent and for export all over the world. So this plant we are building will belong to South Africa. It won't belong to an international company. And Chair, we have made provision that Transnet builds that plant so that we can have the capacity to design trains, to manufacture trains for our own needs, but also to export and become a player and build the economy as it is. So I felt, Chair, I should explain those two elements so that it's understood that when we say that 20 trains that we may order, we are not saying we will, but we're putting the plan that contingency in case we need to do to go through to that end. So, Chair, I think that is a program on the new trains. Of course, as you know, that one of the major things we have said, and I think we announced with the former Minister of Transport, we provided for 30% of this particular program. 30% minimum of 30% BEE and the participation. Chair, this matter will be considered by the Board of PRASA tomorrow in Pretoria, and I think that we expect our Minister of Transport to make an announcement on it on Thursday. I won't go much into that except to say, Chair, that once we've completed this 30% plus what is available within Kibela Consortium, would have achieved 41% black economic participation in this entire deal. So 41% of this 51 billion rand contract will go to black hands, as it were. But the details share will announce on Thursday. It will be announced on Thursday by our minister. Now, Chair, I'm dealing with the rail, with the commuter rail side, with Metro Rail. I want to say that we have recently also concluded a new contract to buy locomotives, 88 new locomotives, to the tune of the 3.5 billion rands. We didn't include it in the slides here, but that is aimed at ensuring that we make a proper and efficient connection between our cities, between, for example, Johannesburg and Cape Town, between Polokwane and Johannesburg, between Durban and all the rural towns that are there. We currently use Shosholozamail, and many people will tell you it is not competitive. In its current form, it will never succeed. So part of the inefficiency had to do with the fact that this train, we use one locomotive. In the course of its journey, it must stop. We must spend 2 hours just changing locomotives, put a different locomotive, change drivers. It's just so costly. Time-wise, I think that your travel time is very, very long. So we said it will never survive in an environment as dynamic as ours. We need an intercity, long-distance train service that is able to respond to that. So we've awarded that 3.5 billion rand to a consortium led by a Spanish company called Foslo, which manufactures locomotives. And we think that when we start to introduce in the first quarter of 2014 some of the locomotives, you'll see that in some of the corridors we'll be able to run some of these long-distance trains more faster and more efficiently. And we then get people moving away from the roadside back into the rail side as it is. I mean, let me give you two examples, Chair. Between Johannesburg and Polokwane, once you run a train over 5 hours, they're not going to be competitive. And that is why the roadside is beating us hands down. The people who are beating us are all buses that actually, some of them are not even roadworthy. But people prefer to travel on those unroadworthy buses or unroadworthy taxis because they say the rail service is not reliable and it's very slow. So one of the key things that we are discussing with Transnet is that we use that main line and we run it at different speeds of up to 140, 160 kilometers. Because so that the people will see that, in fact, the train and the and the roadside, that the rail side is more competitive than that. I think that is very important that we do that. So, Chair, next year we'll be able to do that once the main line has been open and that. But currently, we cannot say the same thing, Chair. And that is why you see we are losing a lot of that. So we are not only buying for Metro Rail, but we are buying also the locomotives for the intercity long distance, which is very important when you want to connect. So you'll see that we've identified 4 corridors on the long distance side that are very important. Johannesburg, Polokwane, Musina is a very important corridor for us. There are huge numbers of people there, Chair. Secondly, when we look at Johannesburg, Pretoria, Komatipoort, lots of people travel to Maputo, week in, week out. And we said to the government, and we're talking to our CFM, a sister company in Maputo, in Mozambique, that we actually should start to introduce passenger service that goes right into Maputo. But we can't do that with the current locomotives. We can do that once the new ones have been delivered. People currently, they go into Komatipoort, they get off the border there, they spend hours just on the border before they go to the other side. There's a lot of South Africans who travel to Maputo for business or for other things. They don't have that option. So we think, Chair, that with the new locomotives, we'll then be able to do that. And we've already started this consortium ordering some of the parts so that we build the new reliable locomotives. That is what I'm trying to emphasize is that We are not doing it for metro rail in the urban areas, but we are trying to open that up. The other corridor share, of course, is the Johannesburg-Durban one. Currently, a train takes 11 hours, whereas people travel for 6 hours on the roadside. Surely that if a train and if a train travels for 7 hours, we think that will be more competitive than what it is currently. Cape Town is long chair. We've realized that, in fact, that train runs for 21 hours, whereas in real time chair, it can run for 14 hours. We've done the simulations, we've looked at that, and also that requires for PRAS and Transnet to change the way we manage the network. You know, the way we manage the network, chair, we are managing it, we're putting a lot of speed restrictions and other things that are constrained to what we can do. So these are some of the changes that we want to see, even at the long distance side that we do. Chair, when we were in the committee last year, I think the committee also emphasized one important issue. We had agreed that this is not just about buying trains. It's an opportunity to do an investment as for the country. Now, the bid that we've accepted, Chair, has made a number of commitments that are there. I spoke about the 30% for equity partners, but that will move to 41% when we sign. On skills development, Chair, 797 million has been put aside on skills development side. On enterprise development, 750 million to be spent on the development of enterprises in the rail sector. On socio-economic development, Chair, I think that you can see that the consortium will spend 273 million rand in the northwest as well as in the northeast region of Tshwane to achieve some of the goals. On subcontracting, Chair, I think that we talk about almost 33 billion rand to empowered companies, which means that 33 billion rand of the 51 billion rand will actually remain in the country as we speak. And of course, there's 5 billion rand, Chair, on different SMMEs. There's 1.7 billion rand to women-owned entities, and the direct jobs, as I said, is just over 8,000, with 23,000 coming from the indirect jobs. So that's the economic development plan linked to the buying of the new trains, as it were. The challenge is for PRASA to make sure that these things do happen, Chair. The challenge is to make sure that we hold the bidder to deliver on the commitments that have been made. It means PRASA must have proper qualified people to make sure that all these commitments that have been made are realized. Because, yes, there are experiences, there are lessons in past projects that we've done where these things are not never happen at all. Chair, let me also emphasize the issue on localization. I think, Chair, that we put in our RFP, request for proposals, that there must be 65% localization on these trains. I'm happy, Chair, that in year two we'll have 69%, and I think that on average we'll be at around 72-73% in the delivery of these trains. The bidder has committed that by year 10, when we produce the last trains, would have reached almost 100% in terms of the localization that we have. Chair, in addition to building the local factory that I spoke about earlier on, one of the major things is we also propose is what we call a product evolution facility, where the South African industry will benefit the technology to design trains. As you know, that that capacity has been lost over a period of time, and therefore that more specifically Alstom will ensure that our own companies here that are involved in train manufacturing benefit from that technology. So from the technology transfer, the product evolution facility will make sure that we achieve that as it is. The number of people to be trained, Chair, for this program is 19,500 of people who will be given the necessary skills that are there. In this industrial part, we are not only building a plant, as I said, we'll be having supplier companies being there, but also a training facility for the skills that will be required that is there. So, Chair, that is in so far as our investment on rolling stock. As I said, that hopefully once we've tomorrow the board will approve, we'll then go and work with Treasury, because you recall that they've given us 40 billion rands. Now the program is costing 51 billion rands. So there's a difference of 11 billion rands that's there. We need to go back so that they can give us the additional billion rands. And once that has been committed, then we can formally sign the contract and the work begins to make sure that we deliver the next generation of trains for the country. The next major investment for us, we've started this work, the people on the ground, is to introduce the new signaling systems. As I said, that signaling systems are very important, Chair. We've awarded 4 contracts on this one since last year. The first one, of course, we allocated in 2011, we allocated to Siemens. Is the first phase of building what you call a Gauteng nerve center where the train control will be managed. That was just over 1 billion rand that we awarded to Siemens. And this year they won the second phase of that, which is about we should bring the total Gauteng signaling project to 3.8 billion rands. And what it means, so we'll have a modern electronic interlocking signaling systems in Gauteng. So that part we have done, that is a value. Siemens is already at work on this particular project, Chair. Then we have done it for Western Cape. Western Cape, we've awarded it to a company called Thales Mazia Consortium. As Chair, I need to emphasize that the signaling projects are 5-year projects. They are 5-year contracts, not 1 year, 2 years, as it is. That is for over a period of 5 years. To rebuild the signaling systems that we have. Of course, the first major element will have to be completed before or by 2015, so that we can start to run some of the new trains that will be coming to the system. But these are 5-year contracts, and that consortium of Thales and a local company have won that, and that is the change in the Western Cape system that is there. In Durban, we've awarded it to Bombardier. And also, they are already at work, Chair, to address that. Chair, I spoke about us spending 2 billion rands on refurbishing and upgrading the current fleet. There it is, you can see in that slide. This is the trains that we have. Last week, we had the Portfolio Committee on Transport on an oversight visit at PRASA. We visited a chair where they saw how these trains are being upgraded. They saw some of the trains that have been done. As we said, that we spend over 2 billion rand a year. And in the last financial year, Chair, we refurbished and upgraded 579 of these trains that are back in service across the country. When they visited Union Carriage and Wagons in Niger last week, the committee was there. 2 fully-fledged trains have been completed, and they were already due for deployment last Friday. The committee saw that, Chair, for themselves, so that we don't talk about that in the air. They see the actual work that we've done. They went also to Transnet, Rail Engineering in Goedespoort in Pretoria. They saw how these trains are being manufactured. But the facilities to manufacture, or rather to refurbish and upgrade trains, they're everywhere, Chair. There's one facility in Bloemfontein. There's one facility in Pietermaritzburg. There's one facility here in Salt River in Cape Town. There's one facility in the Eastern Cape in East London. And there's a fifth one. There's one here also in Toast River, here in the Western Cape. So we've got all these facilities here that are refurbishing and upgrading the current trains, even before we bought. When we present our annual report, you'll see, Chair, that we have completed 579 of those trains. So it's one program that is there, and I think the numbers are very clear on that. And as you can see, Chair, that the numbers keep on increasing as well as we invest on the current fleet that is there. Chair, a major project that we will launch this year, we have now completed it, is in Durban. Chair, is what we call the Bridge City Development. It's a project located in Inanda, Duzum, and Kwamashu, as well as Phoenix in KZN. We've just completed building the 3.2-kilometer railway line, and we've built an underground station under a mall. Chair, we are 99-point-whatever completed on this project, and that the Minister of Transport will officially open this project as part of the October Transport Month. The first week of October is due for opening. Chair, this is the work that we've done. You can see the tracks there. You can see, I think on this slide is very clear, Chair. You can see these are the lines that we've just built. It basically connects Bridge City. So you can see this is a line here that just built, it has never worked, completely new, that connects Duff's Road station with the new Bridge City development with an underground station. I think hopefully when we open that, Chair, the members of the committee will be able to join us onto that. It's not a plan, it's done, Chair, and would have completed it, in fact, at the end of June, but there was a strike at some stage and one part of the bridge was destroyed, so it had to be rebuilt again. But that project is 99% done. Chair, the other project that we're busy with, which again will open at the, towards the end of the year, is what we call the Greenview Pinasport Rail Extension. Is in Mamelodi in Pretoria. Let me just explain what this project is all about, Chair. We had the old lines in Mamelodi, ending up at Eerste Fabriek station. It was a double track. Beyond that, it was mainly a freight line. There was only one line. But with the growth the east of Pretoria growing so extensively, massive numbers of people locating in the east of Mamelodi, you had then we started a makeshift station where people can get onto the train. But what happens is that people have to wait for a train to come into Eerste Fabriek. Then when it goes into Pinasport station, which is the makeshift station, they must wait for the train to come in and to go out again because it's a single line. So people on average wait for about 27 minutes for the train to come in and out of that. We have now, Chair, started the project. We had a meeting with the community in 2009. They asked us to build two new stations there and to double the track. We allocated 400 million rand into this particular project. Chair, I'm happy that we are now completing the laying of the tracks. What it means is that people will not wait for 27 minutes for a train. It means in the peak, they'll get a train every 6 minutes as things stand. Yes, we haven't started with the building of the two stations. The main reason being that the land where the station has to be built is currently occupied by people, and the city of Tshwane has to relocate them to a different place before we could start building. But the building of the tracks, Chair, we've continued with doing that, and it's a project that will also launch later this year, and it's just part of the work that we've been doing, Chair. You can see the designs of the stations that would be in that part, I think that are there. The Pinasport station will no longer be a makeshift. When we finish, that will be the station that we'll have. The Greenview station, Chair, there's no station there at this point in time. So it won't be an upgrade, it will be a completely new station that we built. Hopefully that when we go by April next year, all the stations will be in place. The Mamelodi Gardens and the Pinasport are existing stations, but they'll be modernized and upgraded. In addition, Chair, we've got 134 stations that must be modernized. These stations, we put them on corridors where the new trains are going to come in. Because we don't want to have a new train and then stations that are outdated, that are falling apart. So we've identified the corridors that where we're going to introduce the trains. In Gauteng, the trains, Chair, will come from Mabopane, Pretoria, Germiston, Johannesburg, and Naledi in Soweto. So from Mabopane, because this is a high volume corridor, as I said earlier, on over 60,000 people travel from Mabopane into Pretoria, into Germiston, into Johannesburg. And the same number of people travel from Naledi in Soweto into town, into Johannesburg. And some of them work in Germiston, Isando, and around the airport industria, as it were. So all those stations on that corridor will then have to be upgraded for that. And we started and awarded some of the contracts, some of the projects that are done. In KZN, Chair, it is Umlazi, Durban, KwaMashu, and Bridge City. As you know, Chair, the main corridor in Durban is basically Umlazi, KwaMashu. It's Umlazi, Durban in the middle, Umlazi from the south, Durban in the center, and then Kwamashu in the north. So that is a corridor that will do that. In Cape Town, we'll have Khayelitsha and Kapsteinklep into Philippi and into Cape Town. Those are the three main corridors where you're going to see the 134 stations being upgraded so that we can achieve the goals that we have. In the same corridor, Chair, because this is part of preparing these new trains, we've got to replace the current tracks that we have, and that is why we said it's a 120 kilometer per way program. We've already bought some of these tracks, rails rather. Unfortunately, Chair, South Africa used to have to produce its own rails. We had to go abroad and buy rails, which we should be producing in the country, because we had our own steel industry. But some of these companies, you find that the price is not right, delivery is just not right. But just imagine if you buy that amount of rails and we produce them somewhere in Sidi Beng or in Limpopo or wherever, the number of jobs that we could be creating out of this particular program. Chair, we had to order because no one can deliver those to us in time. In Cape Town, particularly on the Simonstown line, we had the rail system falling apart there. We had to replace the tracks. And these we bought abroad at a very huge cost. They had to be shipped into the country and we put them. But the big question is that if we say we're building our own industry, why should we import a rail that we should be having? Because we've got Prasa, we've got Transnet. Both of them, we've got between ourselves over 22,000 kilometers of that. We'll always require rails. It's like wheels of a train. We can't buy them abroad. We have to buy to manufacture and maintain them here and refurbish them here, because there will always be a requirement and there's an opportunity for employment and skills development there, Chair. Chair, this one, we call it the Integrated Station Asset Management System, but we call it Speed Gates. I think, Chair, we've committed 1.7 billion rands of that. We are 99% done on this particular project. If you go to Cape Town Station today, or you go to Pretoria Station today, you find that we've introduced the modern gates that are there. These gates, Chair, they are waiting for, they'll enable us to use the card system, not the paper ticketing system as it were. So we've introduced them. We've done quite a couple of stations. Orlando Station has got them. So we put them across the country. And we think that now we're due for a second phase of that project. But already 1.7 billion rand has been introduced onto this particular program. And yeah, I think at that time, once we have this card system, it means we'll be able to interface with the Gautrain, with some of the bus companies, so that we use the same technology. And I think from an inconvenience point of view, it will be good. But I think, Chair, when the Select Committee at the time, when it decides to visit, it will see some of these trains and some of these facilities that I'm presenting you here, because that's what we showed to the Portfolio Committee in their last visit last week. Chair, the final program that I want to talk about is the depots. The depots where we do the maintenance for the trains. Now, when we buy the new trains, we require new depots. We can't maintain them in the current trains. Like the Gautrain, I think many of you will see in the Gautrain in Midrand, they've got their own modern maintenance facility. The current train, the new trains, the current trains we maintain in Salt River. We maintain that in East London. We maintain that in Bramfontein, in Johannesburg. We do that in Bloemfontein as well as in two facilities in Durban. Now, we need new facilities, new depots for the new trains, as it were. And, Chair, I think that we decided that we'll build five. One in Gauteng South, in Bramfontein Depot, we'll build a new one. Gauteng North in Bloemfontein. Western Cape in Salt River will also then be built next to the existing facility. Etekwini will build in the Durban Staging Yard as well as in Springfield at Depot. And that program, Chair, we are putting quite a lot of money. To recall that we expect to spend 5 billion rands, but last year when the Minister of Finance announced his budget, he announced the first billion rands that were given for this particular program, and we are busy still in the tender thing. Chair, the third part of our rail investment is on the rail extensions. I know, Chair, that we couldn't do and prioritize investment in the network, because the priority was to ensure that we save, we arrest the decline in metro rail. But now we are at the point where we've got to open up the network and increase. Let's start with the Moloto Rail Corridor. Chair, I must emphasize that the reason why we're calling it Moloto Rail Corridor is because it was not just going to be a railway line. It was going to be the development on the path. A lot of people, of course, believe that this is only a rail line from Moloto. We call it Moloto because of the first phase, because the first phase is from Pretoria to Siyabuswa and Mpumalanga. Chair, the second phase of that goes to Skukuneland, so that we can run a train that this is not a normal train system, it's a high-speed train, so that we can have someone leaving Skukuni via that line, getting into Gauteng within a short period of time. Because if we put a train at 250 kilometers on that line. This project we took to Cabinet. In 2006, it was approved by Cabinet. But I think that and we're working with the provincial government of Mpumalanga, Chair, and second with the National Department of Transport. Then the different municipalities, I think that at that time there was a political committee led by the Minister of Transport that involved also the mayors from Skukune, from the three municipalities within Mpumalanga, Tshwane and Johannesburg, because they were affected by that. When the cabinet approved that project, I think that at that time it was estimated at 87 billion rands. Currently, Treasury and the Department of Transport are reviewing the what we call the feasibility study. But I think that everyone agrees, Chair, that we've got a lot of buses on that line. We spend a lot of money as government subsidizing those buses. So this is one project that when it materializes, of course, from a jobs point of view, it's going to be very crucial. From unlocking development between Mpumalanga and Limpopo, I think that is going to be very vital. But Chair, I think that's what it is. Now the structure that will drive this particular project, Chair, of course, PRASA will be the implementing agent, will coordinate the implementation of this particular project. But of course, at that time, Chair, Treasury was trying to look whether it should be a project where it's run through a PPP. But I think that the review of the feasibility study will tell us ultimately what is the form of implementation around that. Chair, we've got another project called the Baralink. The Baralink, as you know, Chair, in 2010 we spent 370 million rands upgrading the stadium as well as the network leading up to Soka, next to Soka City. Currently, it's 2 minutes when you come by train to come and watch a game or rugby, or you come in for all the activities in that vicinity of Nazareth. Chair, the most important thing is that you are now able to go within 2 minutes from that modern station that we built in 2010. Now we are trying to extend that line from Nazareth into the west of Soweto. I think that's what we are trying to do, Chair. And that line, as you can see, that we're putting there is part of our connection there. We think it will cost us 2 billion rand to do that particular project. And I think, Chair, it's one of the projects that we put under 6-7 as part of the presidential infrastructure projects to be rolled out. Chair, the next one is Motherwell Rail Link.
Did you say 2 billion rand?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 2 billion rand, Chair. You'll see that we've got on the lines, Chair, in those slides, I put expected capital costs on all of those things. We've done feasibilities on this project, Chair. Most of them are now going through professionals and tender processes for us to be able to start implementing on that issue. But the point I'm trying to make is that we are not just working on the current existing network, we're extending it. And these are the projects that are there. The third one, Chair, is the Motherwell Rail Link in the Eastern Cape. Chair, I think that in the Nelson Mandela Bay, the Motherwell extension will ensure that we bring rail into the heart of public transport there, and we expect that they will increase the passenger numbers to 35,000 by 2020. We think that will be a right investment. We've done the feasibility, Chair, and I think that we will start with that. Initially, we allocated 740 million rand for this particular project, but we think that the numbers have now changed, and it will help the Eastern Cape, particularly with because that will also be the first phase. The second phase of that project is to connect railways to Kuha, the passenger rail side, so that people will be able to go to the Nguha development for jobs and everything, traveling by train. So the next railway connection or extension is the Cape Town International Airport Link, Rail Link. Chair, when we talk of the airport rail links, a lot of people say it's a privilege. You go all over the world. When you get to an airport, an international airport, you get onto a train and travel by train. And I think, Chair, with the Gautrain, that link has been created for OR. Within the other two international airports, Cape Town as well as Kinshasa should have that. We've been working with the city of Cape Town on the Cape Town International Airport Rail Link. Chair, we are not building a line from the airport to Cape Town. We are connecting the city to an existing line, and so that we can run a train every 15 minutes from Cape Town to the airport. If you want to get your car, you should get it in Cape Town, at Cape Town, and then travel easily, or you just walk as it were. This project is very important for us, Chair. It's very important not only because of the airport, but it's because we'll be able to connect the working class areas of Blue Downs and further in the Metro Southeast to this particular process. And I'm hoping, Chair, that this is one project where, in fact, private sector investment is going to be very important. We don't have to pay for it because it's a line that will pay for itself. If you look at passenger numbers, the Cape Town International Airport now accounts for over almost 9 million passengers per annum. That number is expected to grow to just over 13 million passengers. You'll never move them by bus. So I think that the My City bus solution that the city has put in place is very important as an intermediary solution. But in the long run, we need to ensure that the numbers are on rail. Every 15 minutes, we can connect between the city. But also it gives accessibility to a lot of people, because it means people who work at the airport would be able to travel there from wherever, every part of the of Cape Town or of the Cape Metropole into that station. Kinshasa, Chair, and the Northern Links, I think that many of you are aware that there's been a massive development to the north of Durban, of Etiquini Metro, Chair, with the Dube Trade Port, the Kinshasa Airport itself, and going right up to Balito. And Chair, we are providing two solutions. The first one is that behind the new Kinshasa International Airport, there's a railway line. We want to provide the station in the meantime, and then allow people to travel to the airport through a bus, which would be a very short trip. But in the long run, Chair, that we've asked the airport company of South Africa to provide a plan to integrate a station, a railway station, at the airport. They've done it for Cape Town already. The Cape Town International Airport provides a plan for a station, for a railway station. So we're asking them to do the same in Kinshasa, so that when we build the railway line, it can go, people can then travel direct into that. So this is another rail link, as it is, Chair. Now, Chair, I just want to show some of finally to that. Now, I've dealt with KZN, I've dealt with Gauteng, I've dealt with the Eastern Cape, Chair. There are three provinces that I dealt with Mpumalanga. Chair, we've just completed last year what we call a rail plan for the whole of Limpopo. We were working with the Department of Transport in Limpopo. We did a study for them. That study gave us some very interesting solutions. We thought that the main travel between Limpopo is from Johannesburg to Polokwane and Musina. We actually find that a lot of people travel within the province of Limpopo. The transport study shows that there's a lot of transport demand inside the province, and that we're not responding to that. Now, what we're looking at is to look at the branch lines, the railway lines that are not functional, with a view to revive them and connect them quite easily into that. And long term, of course, is to have a metro system for Polokwane as a city in the long run. Chair, the final one, of course, is the Free State. There are two things that we are doing in the Free State. One, of course, is that we just introduced, we were asked by the two provincial governments to bring a service between Kimberley and Bloemfontein. We've introduced a service there. The numbers are still not going well. And secondly, we've been working with the province in bringing in on the Buchabelo side to reactivate the existing line and introduce a bus rail service. Chair, at the time when we had finalized the plans and the study was very conclusive that you need a rail solution there, the bus operator took PRASA, the Department of Transport and the provincial government to court so that we don't build, they say that that railway line will take their subsidy and their passengers, and I know the matter is still in court, so we are not able to move until there's been a determination by the court. So vested interests are holding back what we could be doing in the Free State in that particular regard. We are also, Chair, I spoke about corridors where we want to run shorter services. We have now, and I think Mosengwa, we have introduced already the service from Johannesburg to Bloemfontein.
Yes.
So that is one of the major services that we find that there's been a lot of demand, particularly on Fridays. We find that there's a massive movement of people between Johannesburg and Free State, as well as between Bloemfontein and the Eastern Cape, and that's what we made provision for some of those services that are there. Chair, I just want to show some of the highlights of the thing. This train you see, of course, is one of those refurbished trains from the old trains. If I go quickly to this slide, you can see that we've converted this kind of a train into this train. And I think that these are some of the trains that people have destroyed or burned. And when we burn this kind of a train, we lose 65 million rands at a time. This is the kind of investment that people destroy. So it's quite a lot of money. And that's why we've been saying to people and saying to the police, please make sure that we bring these people to book. That is very vital. So Chair, I'm trying to show, of course, a different thing. From a safety and accessibility point of view, you can see the gap here, Chair. You can see that people with special needs will not be able to access this train. So we've got what we call part of our infrastructure program, we call a platform height improvement program, and this is what one of the stations that we've done. Newland Station here in Cape Town is one of the stations we've done. Crown Station in Johannesburg is where we've done. Dennilboom Station is where we've done, so that it becomes quite easy. Of course, we have to do it across the country and close the gap between. It's a very safety measure because people do fall and they get injured when that happens. And so this is what we're doing on the platform corrections project, Chair. These are some of the stations that we've done. I think, Chair, those of you who are traveling on the train, you'll see that we've invested 500 million into Cape Town Station. I think that it's a different station to what it used to be. It's what we call new generation stations, where we have people, the passenger flows is quite good there. And we've relocated the small business that are there. We've provided them with facility on top. We didn't throw them out. A lot of people think we've thrown them out. But if you go on top of the station next to the rent, there is all those facilities for small businesses that they rent from us. We've provided them actually with better facilities. They're no longer on the path of passengers where you find that people fall, and when the train is, when people are rushing for trains, there's a problem. The new station shall allow for natural light. That is one of the major things. And from an accessibility point of view, that's what we've done. So Cape Town Station is an example, Chair, and you'll see that we did other 33 stations where, even though it was not a major upgrade, you would call it a station improvement so that the facilities can work. Chair, just finally, let me summarize some of the highlights, because I've seen the audited financial results of PRASA. Some of the things that come out of our own audit that we see, I think, Chair, the one of the important highlights for us in the 2012-2013 financial year is the fact that we were able to conclude and we were able to embark and finalize this rolling stock fleet renewal program. I think that is a major thing for us, and that we've commenced with the with the implementation of the five-year signaling program in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape, that we've been able to do, should be 579, not 578, we've been able to refurbish and upgrade 579 of the coaches that we have, Chair. We've awarded over 500 bursaries, Chairperson. These are bursaries are mainly in the scale in the area of engineering, finance, and I think that we've taken up students. We also sponsor, Chair, some of the learners outside. One of the our social responsibility program is what we call, we sponsor a program called Kutlwanong, a math and science education program. We spend 3 million rand onto that program. The best student, one of the best students Chair, on maths last year, was a student who participated in our program from the rural areas. I think I can't remember the one of the rural areas in KwaZulu-Natal. So we've targeted, we're doing it in Soweto, we're doing it in rural KwaZulu-Natal. Those are the two provinces that were sponsoring this program. Chair, we've had 2,000 learnerships, of course, last year, and we're hoping that we'll be able to do 3,000 this particular financial year that we have. Chair, we launched, and I think the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Transport attended that launch. We launched in June this year a program where we took 87 stations and give them to cooperatives. These cooperatives are run by mainly women in communities closer to the stations. They clean the stations, Chair. We are doing it in partnership with the Department of Public Works. We are doing it with the Department of Trade and Industry. And basically we've taken away these stations and given it to cooperatives that are run by our own people closer to the stations. The DTI gave them 300, each cooperative, they give them a once-off 350,000 rand as a startup to enable them to buy the equipment and everything. And as we speak now, they're working, Chair, in different stations. We launched it in Umlazi in June, and I think that is very important that we do. Hopefully these cooperatives would evolve, Chair, where they can then grow the economic base and start to look at the cleaning material, detergents, and all sorts of things so that they buy from themselves and then create that economic base that is there. Chair, that is a summary. Hopefully I've captured everything, but that's the work that we're involved in as PRASA at this point in time. And once again, I think I would like to extend our invitation that in one of its oversight, if the committee would spend some time on PRASA so that we can see the physical changes that we've been trying to bring to our railway line. Yes, we know that it's still difficult. A lot of people still travel under very difficult conditions. The overcrowding, but I think, Chair, I'm not sure, maybe we should go into questions, but as we discuss, I'll ask the CEO of our rail division to talk about the five-point plan on how we're trying to improve rail services as it stands. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO of PRASA. There's a lot of information, and as I said, we represent provinces. We are from provinces, we are from the rural areas. Members will now ask questions, but before I do that, I would like to welcome Honorable Mlenzana, who represents the Eastern Cape, the province of the Eastern Cape, and Honorable Divier, who represents the Western Cape. Members will now engage with the presentation of which I think it was really thought provoking. Honorable Mabija, Honorable Jacobs, in that order.
Thank you for the presentation, and I could see you are doing it with confidence. Even though, to me, it caused pain because the implementation of those developments, whatever, is biased to better places. And there's nothing that is being said time and again to the most rural provinces, meaning that you take coal from where they grapple to get it, and you take it from them, you take it to the coal mine. Because I'm hearing you time and again, most of your presentation talks about Gauteng, and Gauteng is okay. It talks about KZN, and KZN is okay. You talk about Western Cape is okay. Which means that it's like we are motherless children in the poor of the poorest provinces. What you can tell us is that in Limpopo, it was exciting. And it will in the long run, something will be done. Because we are also paying taxes that we are implementing in other selected provinces. And you wonder what type of service and development are you giving to South Africans? The criteria that you are using to prefer improving facilities to certain provinces, whereas we are all South African citizens of South Africa. And you know, there's something that I maybe you will make me understand. In your presentation, you made mention of the last time a new train was bought in 1980 stretching to 1994 is 33 years. That is a period between the last train of 1994 when we established a democratic administration. And from that 1994 to date, 2013, as we are coming up with a very convincing plan to improve, it's 20 years. Even though there's some way you are doing this and that and that, had it not been better that when we came into government, you do things thoroughly, prioritizing without any waste of money to refurbish some of the things, and to start with the plan that you are saying it now, that will be visible sometime in 2015. And whereas since 1994, there are lots of billions and trillions that you've been using. Had you used it to buy those new trains, to renew those stations, to build new stations, even in rural areas like Mpumalanga and Limpopo, Northern Cape, and so on. I don't understand the reasoning, the logic of implementation according to the needs. So can you please make me understand how you are doing your business? It's like it's one-sided. Whether there's some interest or whatever, just make me understand. I'm a lay person in this department because I'm just a member of parliament, but with knowledge and practical experience, because I'm from the poor of the poorest, who are also paying tax and being... Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Sharon. Thanks for the presentation that we received. I think Honorable Mabija has said a mouthful. It's good that we're improving the rail system, building new coaches and so on.
but the reality is that how are poor provinces benefiting? The main focus, as Oluwa Bija said, is Gauteng, Western Cape and KZN. In some of the provinces, it is just by the way. You don't go into detail, as we are going to into detail in Gauteng, KZN, and so on. Here, billions and billions of rents are going to be involved. And my question is, how are our people going to benefit from this? Especially in provinces, urban, poor, rural, women, youth, disabled people, and so on. I understand you are talking about the BEs and so on. What I would like to understand, how many of these billions are remaining in South Africa? How many of these billions are going into the hands of our own people? Would you say after this, to say, I have produced Mr. Mlenzan from nowhere to become a millionaire, to become a billionaire, out of the investment that you've made? I'm not talking about the PEs or the cooperatives. I think people from the ground must see the benefits of this investment. Not only those who are there, who are well established. We need somebody from nowhere to say, this is the person that we have produced out of this investment. And I was also thinking about, because I come also from the Free State, you are only talking about Kimberley, the rail system from Kimberley to Bloemfontein to Otavio. But there's a lot of connection. If you look at Lesotho, how do you connect Lesotho with Bloemfontein? How do you connect Bloemfontein with Goldfields? Because in that way, you would be improving our rail system. For instance, you talked about building a new firm, and that firm is been built in Gauteng, where they are well established. And that gives people that from rural areas to flock into industrial areas. But if we could be decentralized in this economy, people will not be moving from the rural areas into Gauteng because they know they will be benefiting from their stay. Because as it is now, you are making a congestion that people should, all of them should flock to these urban areas, to these cities to go and look for jobs and so on. And it increases the problems of infrastructure, houses, and whatnot and whatnot. So I'm a little bit perturbed because maybe I don't know whether you have the master plan for the whole country, because I think you should be having a master plan. Whilst you are improving on this side, you are developing on this side, but the main focus is only on developing the developed. And those who are underdeveloped, they'll remain underdeveloped. Maybe we need to understand when these tenders were awarded, which top South African companies are awarded these tenders, and what percentage are held by foreign companies, and which companies are involved in rolling stock fleet renewals program. Also, did PRASA build in strategies to ensure that the rural and urban employed are also benefiting from this program? I think it would be crucial, because last time, I don't know whether we would get that presentation,
where in Mpumalanga to say these goods must move from road to rail. And nothing has been said about that. Because we have been to Mpumalanga, we have seen how these trucks destroy the roads. And it's a good opportunity for us as a country to remove those goods from road to rail. And we will also be competing with the private sector. But that is not said. So maybe I think we, I'm not so sure. But I'm just disappointed to see that we are not improving. And billions of our monies, our own people are not going to benefit. Our provinces are not going to benefit. That's it.
Thank you, Honorable Lenzen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for accepting my apology. But I had to rush to make sure that I'm part of this meeting, knowing the importance of dealing with this presentation. Hence, it took me less than 5 minutes to go through this document because I was looking for specific, you know, issues which I couldn't pick up. Issues that, Chair, we have been harping on for how many years now? We are now left with a few months that we say goodbye to this fourth parliament, talking the same things to the same people, but literally refusing. Let me start, Chair, with this that has been said, but with an addition, that when TRASA is talking provinces, it will talk three provinces. But even with those provinces, Chair, I am fortunate that though I am in the Eastern Cape, I am almost in the border of both the Eastern Cape and KZN. When Brother is talking KZN, with due respect, they are not talking the western part of KZN. There's nothing they're talking about. Peter Maritzburg, Shepstein, going down, moving down to Kokstad. There's nothing. Instead, what they did was to close down the rail in Kokstad. It's now Kokstad, it's now an isolated, you know, area. Even that rail line was just cut. I've been harping on this many at a time. They will give me theory. When they talk in passing, Eastern Cape, it will only be Nelson Mandela and East London, as if there is no life around Umtata. The whole eastern part of Eastern Cape, there's no life there. Chair, I am not going to lament about this question of taking our people from road to rail, because this is what we have been saying. I would now ask a question. If BRASA has a deliberate program, let's hear. Do you have a deliberate program of moving our people from road to rail? If yes, where and how? With time frames. Chair, we've been talking for so long about closing the rail gap. I did not hear anything about closing the rail gap. You are talking linking your development to economic development. When you are talking the eastern part of the Eastern Cape, you are talking of, for instance, your Umzimvubuha, which is likely, you know, to give spin-offs. But now, how do you link that to your Mucha that you are talking about if you are not talking closing the rail gap? Then lastly, Chair, you are talking of bursaries, 500 or so, ne?
500.
Yes, 500 bursaries. How are our rural children benefiting for such bursaries? Can we have a breakdown as to where are these children coming from? Or is it the same thing that you would be talking of children from Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape that you are giving them bursaries? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. a chairperson, I don't know how to approach it, because the presenter has said that the proposal is going to be presented to the board tomorrow. So we hope that what we contributed today might be featured in some way when it's presented finally before the board. Otherwise, we're speaking, then it's going to be a useless exercise. I see the presentation is focused mainly, this huge investment, this capital investment, it's focused mostly to improve the services. But what I want to understand, did you make your research in terms of the huge cable tax scenario in our country, which has a direct impact on the services which you are rendering? Because it destabilizes the whole industry in Cape Town. Between Cape Town and Kalisa, if one cable are stolen, millions of people are stranded. So I want to understand, did you make some research on good practices to deal with the issue of cable theft? And my other issue is that it seems to me you want to, in terms of your old carriages which you still use fuel, are now upgraded to the new technology. And is your recruitment strategy and your skills transfer speaking to that? Because you need then now to recruit or transfer new skills, upgrade the skilling level of the workforce, of your institution, so that they can be able to respond to this new technology which you speak to. I don't want to speak to the issue of road versus rail, because I think it cuts across. It cuts across the board. It might find that the focus is in the Western Cape, but the Western Cape, it's only in the urban area. The road between Friedendal, Saldanha to Cape Town via Mammelsberg is suspended for many, many years. But when people refer to the Western Cape, it's only in the metro. So as if the rural areas don't exist. So it is not a matter of it might be another different scenario in Johannesburg. But in the Western Cape where I'm coming from, I'm emphasizing the fact that they are only focusing on the metro and not on the rural areas. And remember, there are so many people traveling between the rural area and the metro, or the daily metro, in the morning and in the evening, coming to work and go home. So I'm also want to emphasize the issue of the metro versus the non-metro area. I don't want to speak about the rural area. They're not nowhere on the priority list of the institution. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. CEO, if you go to page, I think it's page 28, where that beautiful train is. Well, you said the train will be running from our township into town. But I'm still repeating what the honorable members are saying. We're talking of towns, we're talking of townships. Like in Gauteng, we spoke of Naledi, and in Tshwane, we spoke of Bomamelodi. Like I said when I started, we really represent the rural areas. And we didn't, when we started, we thought, you know, these rural areas will be recognized. But as you are speaking, since we started 2009, we're hearing one and the same information. And like we usually say, what's the use of actually every now and then sitting down and receiving this information on this black and white, whereas there is no improvement? Mulodo. Mulodo, we've been singing this issue of Mulodo even before 2009. Till today, the feasibility study is still being done. And every year, right through, people are being killed in that area. When are we really going to implement? My honorable member said we are left with few months to the end of this fourth parliament. Those who will be coming in will still be hearing the very same song. Until the other 5 years pass. Can't we really, Mr. Montan, can't we really implement instead of talking nice, you know, promises in this presentation. We're talking huge money. And the companies that are being awarded these contracts, if you can maybe elaborate and tell us, even if we are in the rural provinces, how are other companies in these rural areas be informed that there will be 1, 2, 3, so that they can also try their luck, even though they won't be recognized because they are regarded as from the rural areas that they, maybe they don't know, you know. But let's hear how you involve these provinces. Because as far as I remember, I had a call once to say Prasa was in Nelspruit, saying there will be tenders, but the period to the closing of these tenders was so near. And people didn't actually understand. You know, they phone to say, but how can we? We don't understand what this was saying. They came, but the way they were speaking, it was like, you know, they were passing. Let's involve our provinces. Let's involve them. The women. You spoke about the women on page 28 or 29, 1.7 billion to women-owned entities. Do you have the data from all provinces on these women entities? And if you don't, how do we make sure that you train women from the rural areas to make sure that they are all also part and parcel of this? Honorable Mlenzana has asked about the 500 learners. You spoke about the student who with math and science. So there are a lot of students in the rural who's got math and science and who are actually roaming around and don't have any job. How do you engage students to make sure that they take this engineering career serious and as important as you say it? 1.75% of contract value, that is 84.1 million will be spent on rail-related skills development. Kindly, if you can go to Heze View, MCUS, and convene a meeting and, you know, introduce people to this, they will really be excited. You spoke of the plan that is going to be at Ekuruleni. How will these people from the rural areas be able to be there? Because when they are there, they'll also need accommodation. How will you accommodate them? Why don't you just one day think of a plan that is going to be put somewhere in the rural area? I'll stop there. Thank you. Can you respond?
Thank you very much. We appreciate the comments from honorable members. I'll deal with them, and Chair, I'll be very frank. I'm glad that the committee has been very frank, and allow me to also be very frank on these issues. Because I think that when I come to Parliament, I come to the NCOP, I come to that, I think that I'm coming to get feedback, guidance, and directions. I think I'm not happy with the tone, Chair, because I think that is actually not not consistent. I want to invite, again, I want to invite the committee. You know, a statement has been made that we spend billions of rands. These things are not happening. I've heard it in the National Assembly. I've invited. If the committee tables its report there, I think that we're not talking about things that. But let me go back, Chair, because I think...
I don't think the members are saying these things are not happening, but they are saying, they are happening.
Chair, I take seriously what the members are saying, but as I said, that we will be robust, and let's be robust, because I want to deal with the issues, because some of the issues are not even PRASA issues. Mm. There are government policy issues that PRASA is an agency of government, it's directed by government. Mm. You know, let me go back, Chair, to what Honourable Mabitsha said. I think the principal point that I think Honourable members are raising is that, look, make sure that you overcome the urban bias. Make sure that you invest, and I think that message we take seriously. Chair, I think that there are a number of things that need to change. Policy, we need to change in the country, Chair. You see, for me to come and talk about PRASA, the committee asked me to brief that on investment on PRASA, and the committee says you're not investing in the areas in a situation where the policy and government on transport doesn't even do that. It's not going to work. Because the committee will say, go to these areas. But let me also correct factual inaccuracies as well, Chair. Chair, PRASA was formed in 2009, March 2009. The Kokstad rail line was closed by Transnet back in the 1990s. So I think it's just unfair that that will make, for example, statements about the closure of lines. The lines were closed. They were freight lines. Used and owned by Transnet, they now call the branch lines. Okay, PRASA is just a new baby because it was formed for precisely what honourable members are saying is a problem that we need to correct. I think that let's start there, Chair. And I think that we have the media here is going to believe that we close lines. Not a single line has been closed by PRASA. The entire network in the country, I've showed in the fact sheet. Is then page 4, Chair. Yes, Chair. Then page 4. You see that the country has got. Let me repeat what I said. 30,000 kilometers of rail network. 22,300 of that network is what is active. And 2,000 of that 22-kilometer railway is owned by PRASA. It's in the urban areas. A metro system is not a rural system, Chair. It's an urban system around the world. I think let's start there. It's linked to the economy. It's subsidized to make sure that people go to work and come from work. So let's have a common understanding of what these trains are not for the rural areas. They're for the urban commuter rail system, which is what Metro Rail is all about. So I think that so that we don't then speak past each other to say they are not meant for that. They are meant for the metropolitan centers of the country. Okay, that is the first issue. That is the second correction that I think is very important. Chair, I agree with the concern of the committee of Honourable Mlenzane, Honourable Mabitsha, and Jacobs, that there's a lot of rail lines in the rural areas. We should be making a change in the lives of our own people. But these lines are closed, they're not being utilized, and I find it totally unacceptable. I've spoken about this in the past, that it is wrong, we need to get this to benefit the rural people of our own country. It's not been done. But I think that the charge should be leveled where it should be leveled. I don't want to deal with issues that are not. Honorable Mabitsha, I think you raised an important issue. You know, as a government official, in the Department of Public Enterprises and later in Transport. It took me 8 years to convince government to understand that the train system was falling apart. I went actually to the National Assembly to say, I'm raising a red flag. If we don't invest in rail in the country, we are going to actually, it's going to collapse in our own hands. So, again, I don't want to say I was in there in 1994, and all of those things, because all of us are in government, we are there to change things. So I may not have been there, but from the legal point of view, it is now my problem. I must sort it out. But at that time, there was nothing that was there. So I'm raising these issues not in any way to distract from the fundamental point that the honourable members have raised about the provinces. Now, one of the major issues I've raised is that the subsidy in government, the transport subsidy, is an old apartheid subsidy. What was it designed to do? Was to take people from the townships to go and work in the town and in the evening to take them back. Have we changed that system? We haven't changed that. Can't be changed by PRASA. It's a government policy and it's an issue that legislators must address. Now, I want to be very open on this issue, Chair. Have we changed the legislation? Have we called Treasury and say, what is the basis for allocating subsidy? Doesn't allocate any subsidy to the rural areas. Even the very rail company that we run as PRASA, I explained, Chair, at the beginning, that the social laws are made, which is supposed to provide an important connection between our cities and the rural areas. It's not being subsidized. It used to move 3 million passengers. Now we've cut it down to just 1.4 million passengers a year. And you know what's the reason, Honorable Mlenzane? It's because we are told in government that there's no money for this important service that connects the rural and the urban. So that's how government allocates these issues. So, Chair, I think that it's very important to deal with the issues of policy and legislation, which both government and I think Parliament has deal with, not PRASA, unfortunately. And I must be very honest with those issues that are there. So that we can't have a wrong policy. I mean, you know, when I listen to the honourable members, I actually get so excited. Because you are raising a very profound issue about unlocking the potential of our own people. But what it means from a transport policy point of view is that government must allocate resources on what we call a demand-driven system, not on what we have at this point in time. So that is why your rural people are not allocated any money in this system. In fact, when we raise issues with, I've been fighting with Treasury, I don't know, how do you allocate resources? They'll tell you very simple that, hey, Mr. Montana, forget about all the things that we are not asking you to do. We are giving you money to make sure that the metro rail system works. So Honorable Mlenzane, I'm afraid that I remember last year you stood up, you were very militant on this point,
on the same issue.
Yeah. But again, should we shoot PRASA when the issue is a government issue, is a policy issue, is a legislature issue? When we approve the budget in Parliament, are we addressing the very same issue that is there? So, you know, I feel that on the one hand that pain and say honourable members are raising an important issue, but equally I have to defend PRASA and say I've been tasked to do certain things that they're written in legislation. Am I fulfilling the mandate that is there in that thing? But I think the point is correct that politically it has to be established. It has to be a policy that permeates government, that the rural areas of our own country are very important, that the rail system reaches one national network and it must cover all provinces and not the metropolitan centers of the country. So I think let me say that and then Chair respond to the specific issues that has been raised. You know, it pains this, I'm saying this, Chair, because it pains me that, you know, I was one of the people in the Department of Transport when we started the Gautrain. We asked the rest of public transport if we invest these billions of rands in the Gautrain. Today, Gautrain is working, new technologies that brought in some benefits. But the reality of the matter is that it doesn't benefit as many of the people, for example, in the townships and everything. They found it not affordable. Yet the country prioritized building the Gautrain and not Metrorail. Now, when the system is collapsing, everyone forgets that the system is collapsing because we never invested in it. So I think, Chair, that is very important. But the urban bias that the committee is raising, I think that we we do accept that, and I agree with Honorable Mabitch as well that since the Democratic government in 1994 to date, and if you see, I don't think that we've been bold as a country on railways. If you want to see, I went to China in 1999, 2000 as part of a government delegation. It took 12 hours to travel from Beijing to Shanghai on their old train. China made a very strategic decision, policy decision, on how they want to use rail to achieve their own social and economic objectives, mm-hmm. how they want to decentralize, as Honorable Jacobs has said, some of the industries and locate them so that they connect the rest of the country. We haven't made that policy choice as yet. And so if that policy choice is not made, you're not going to allocate the resources. And in fact, I'm told by some people in government that it's not even a very important matter, as it were. So the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises and the Portfolio Committee on Transport, they visited China. They wrote the report, which was tabled in Parliament. I looked at that report. It tells us that if we, even with the visits of Parliament, if when they come out of Parliament, we as officials, we take them seriously and read what Parliament is saying out of that, will be able to change things. Today, China is creating that massive network for their country. We are not moving with speed. We're actually looking at closing more railway lines in the country than opening, than giving an instruction. I mean, if you talk about young people in the rural and the urban areas, mm-hmm. there's no reason why government cannot ask PRASA as its agents and say, we'll give you the money, give young people an opportunity to work on the rehabilitation of infrastructure. These are things that I dream about as a person, but they're not government policy. They're just my dreams, Honorable Mabitch, and I share that with you, and the enormous frustrations that they're expressing. So I think it shows that the legislatures have an important role to play in our system, because if we don't get it right on the policy side, then we're not gonna win around these things. You know, Kosati also said to me, Honorable Mabitch, that they said, you know, we like the plan. When I presented the plan to them 3 years ago, we said we like the plan, but we think it should have started in 1994. And I know Kosati is right. But at that time, I had to convince people who never believed, who've never traveled on a train. I was a KD. I traveled on a train. The first train that I traveled in when I was a youth in Mamelodi is the very same train that I'm refurbishing today. So that gap. And there's someone who still believes that. But I want also to correct another point. The metro system moves the poorest people as well. It's the urban poor, of course, it's not the rural poor. And they've been traveling like animals. And that is why it was very important that we change also that system. But this system is linked to the economy. And that is why, as you do the improvement, we need to expand. And I think that the views that are being raised are radical. I support them. And I'm hoping that they'll find resonance within government and within those who allocate resources for us to do that work. Chair, let me confirm, Honorable Jacobs raised the issue. There are two plans. PRASA has tabled a strategic plan, and you'll see that that plan deals with not only Metro Rail, which is an urban-based system, it's dealing with the entire investment for the entire network in the country. And in addition to that, the Department of Transport, I hope that, Chair, at the right time, the committee may consider to invite Honorable Situma. They're doing what they call a detailed transport master plan. That master plan addresses issues, and I think that's where some of the concerns being raised in government will be addressed and about the master plan. And I think at some stage, they'll tell us which locality, which railway line, and everything other than what we operate. There's a very good reason, Honorable Jacobs, why the factory would be located in Gauteng. I do accept, though, your point that you're making that decentralize this, particularly on the supply side and all of those things. That point I accept, and I think that when we look at our localization program, I think that we'll pay specific attention, and I think that we'll keep you informed, having raised that issue with us. But you recall that at this point in time, we've got factories that are also standing idle. And these factories are supposed to be employing a lot of people. The East Rand is a good example of that. And I think that is very important that we get them back into work. We reindustrialize what has been closed over the years so that there's economic activity. How we link that, of course, depends on which side of the component you do. This is the logistical issue. It's an issue that you need to find a better way to make sure that the supplies are done in a rural area and moved. And I think both Italy and China have done what they've got practical examples of what Honorable Jacobs is talking about. And I think we haven't done that. And I think it's a good point that I accept. We are in the transport master plan, Honorable Jacobs, of Plaza, in the strategic plan, rather, talking about the Lesotho Bloemfontein connection. I think that is very important. You see, some of these connections we're talking about, some people say, and within government, they're saying that these things are privileges, they're not the demand. And we believe that it is from a transport point of view, we agree with you. Chair, I explained last year, I think Honorable Mlenza would recall that one of the major issues raised by members was the issue about the good side of trains. Mm-hmm. But you remember the explanation was that there's a decision in the country. It separated passenger from freight. Prasa deals strictly with passengers, and then Transnet deals mm-hmm. with freight. I know, I don't want to speak on behalf of Transnet, but I think that also I would urge the committee that at some stage we invite both Prasa and Transnet together so that we can discuss what we call from road to rail, because it's a very complex issue. It's a function of reliability, it's a function of policy. Let me give you an example. Why do we have on the freight side more roads, more trucks on the road moving freight than being on the rail system? Another question, why do we have minibus taxis more than the rail side? There's a very simple reason, Chair. When the apartheid government faced a crisis in the 70s and 80s, one of the major decisions that they'll never invest, they should not invest in rail. They're then going to decentralize the road side of things. For example, trucks didn't just carry anything. Okay? When they decentralized or deregulated transport in the 1980s, they took that decision. We've never reversed that decision, of course, after 1994. What it meant is that it killed the general freight business of Transnet, which is a cargo line, and it pushed a lot of cargo into the roadside. So we made the roadside more competitive than the rail side of things. And with the old rolling stock and everything, the truckers were the only winners in that space. Now we don't want every cargo back on rail as well. There's a delicate balance. We want certain cargo on rail, and we want certain cargo still on road. We don't want trucks to drive for long distance and destroy the roads as they're doing the Eastern Cape. We want them to fit in Mpumalanga in particular. I think that you see, particularly now with the mining activity in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga, you see the damage that is being caused there. But so you want that on rail, but you want certain types of cargo on the roadside, because certain of this cargo will not be efficient to move them on the rail side either. There are certain things, for example, when you talk about liquid fuels, that it's not proper for them to move on the roadside. You need them on the rail side as it is. So it's very important that we talk. I know the investment that Transnet is doing, but also some of their efforts. Now, one step in that relationship is not a Transnet or Prasa issue. It's the Minister of Transport using the regulations to say, I'm gazetting that no truck can carry, for example, this type of thing or this type of weight. Mm-hmm. It's not a Prasa issue. It's a first step in that relationship. So one of the measures I think that is honorable members to help us lobby mm-hmm. the Minister of Transport and say, and even the stakeholders out there, to say, amend the Road Traffic Act, amend the regulations so that you can then speak up to the So we're talking about it, but the actual steps we're not taking to say reduce, for example, the vehicle gross mass and that thing, to say this is what we have. It's a practical intervention. It's within our own control. Have we used it? We haven't done it, but we talk about moving from road to rail. It will never work, Chair. The second issue is that the level of reliability is very important. I know that Transnet, but specifically our sister company, Transnet Freight Rail, what we used to call Spoornet, is not only is it buying new locomotives, but it has improved on the turnarounds of its own trains to improve on the efficiencies to make sure that more customers come onto the rail side than on the road side. On the passenger side, we also need a change. A train is not designed to carry 5,000 or less people. It's designed for bigger things. But the current system where we have, for example, you have trucks, or rather taxis moving on long distances, it's not in the best interest of our transport system. And it needs to be regulated. And no one is regulating that aspect of things. And I think that is a major challenge. So what I'm saying to honorable members is that there are certain steps or set of measures that both at the policy level, at the legislature level, and at our level where we are at the operators, we need them to effect so that we can achieve the goals that we have, that we should have achieved even long time ago. As it were. Honorable Mlenzan, I promise you, I think that tomorrow morning we'll send to all members of the committee the list of beneficiaries of our program. You'll see that it's both urban. I don't have it here with me, but you'll see that it's both urban and rural, as well as the participants, which schools are participating in our Kutwano. I'm proud to say, Chair, that we have a different program on skills in railways. We took it to two areas. One area was the urban area, and on the 5th and the 6th of this month, it is going to the Eastern Cape, targeting schools in the rural Eastern Cape so that they see the skills in rail, as it were. And when we took it to Thokoza, we had 15,000 learners from all our township schools coming together, and we say, and most of them say, we never thought of railways even in our own thing. So we've been doing it. In June, I was in Thokoza. It was packed. I was working there with COSAS, and I think that is something that we're taking around the country. So we are actually doing 74 schools around the country. And then you'll see that some of those are schools that come from our rural areas, particularly those are from KZN, Limpopo, as well as the Eastern Cape. On the 5th and the 6th, we were meant to have gone to the Eastern Cape 2 months ago. The provincial government said, don't do it now, because learners are writing exams. But Nibuye Foot, which we're doing on the 5th and the 6th, as it were. You'll see that we've even prepared a bus. One of our buses, we've converted it. It has got computers. It's helping learners so that we can be able to reach the rural areas, as it were. So I want to address, to just assure honorable members that on issues like that, we'll be making sure that our reach to the rural areas is there. Our bus side, we're talking about rail investment, but when we talk about our bus side, you'll see that it actually operates. If you talk in Limpopo, for example, areas like Malamolele and all those areas, is the autopack city-to-city buses that are actually traveling there. In fact, they're now being shot, Chair. You'll see that the taxi industry has been very unhappy shooting some of the buses because they see that they're taking customers away from them. The Eastern Cape, the city-to-city buses, have actually been servicing most part of that. But I know honorable members say, in rail you've got more resources, you've got more capacity, and bring that. And I think that is something that we have. We are currently, Chair, also doing a different plan for the long distance trains, and I think that that's where the province is affected. I want to promise that if the committee give us 2 months on that one, I want to come back and share that so that we have. But also I'll be lobbying the committee. You know, these trains, we were helped by Parliament to buy new trains. When we said we are raising the red flag, I think that with the members feeling very strongly, they must help us to win the funding for rural transport. The problem with rural transport, with the rural areas, is that in the urban areas, even though the rural and the urban areas are not the same, we don't have frequent transport in the rural areas, frequent public transport for our people. And that is why you see them jumping into buggies and everything, and transport that is not safe. You go to the Eastern Cape, Honorable Mlenzan will agree with me. I mean, you see people writing those boxes, but they live to Ohambenhlele. Now, the reason for that is because we do not provide. I mean, the Eastern Cape is a good example of also how we don't fund the urban and the rural areas at the same level. You've got in the western side of the Nelson Mandela, you've got Algoa Bus Company. You go further, you find Maibuye. Honorable Mlenzan, if we do a calculation of how much we give Algoa, okay, and how we give to Maibuye,
you'll actually see the inequalities between the rural and the urban areas that is there. Now, who allocates money to these bus companies? National government give it to the provincial government, and it gives the two companies an equal. So these are the things that are now one, I think that we need to work and support the committee in making sure that they become part of the agenda and close the gap between the rural and the urban areas that are there. Chair, the I think that the issue about the agree honourable member. I think fortunately I lived in the Western Cape. And I know that the nature of the rural areas in the Western Cape. Now, historically, rail has been playing quite a role because they'll take a train. They'll combine it and say that train moves passengers as well as freight, or not heavy, from the rural areas, for example, into the port this side. It would be combined. Now, one of the major mistakes I think the country has done was to have that mechanical separation between passenger and freight, whereas in an area which has got, for example, with the farming area in the Western Cape, that you need that. And I know that from the Western Cape, if you look in the Southern Cape and the East and the, what is it called, the West Coast, you spoke about the West Coast quite a lot, you find a lot of lines. Now you've closed everything, allowed everything to go to the N7, and that is why you're encountering the kind of problems, both in terms of accidents and all of those things. We will improve the current service. But you know that it's because of the same concern that we introduced a service between Mamas Bay and Cape Town. And we I think that you'll see now that the community, the station we're using is not the right station. We went to put money. They've been talking to me personally. The local structures came to say, but can't we improve that service? We have done that. And I think that last week, they were sending us messages saying the project is done. We're quite happy with that. But I think that we can do more so that, as honourable members have said, that it shouldn't be isolated projects for the rural areas. They must be at the heart of that issue. Cable theft, I think you are also correct. What we have done is that there are two things that are important in cable theft. The first one was the changes in the law. You remember that when the Cape Town system was shut down because of cable theft, the people who were arrested, they were each given about 500 rand bail. The Western Cape economy lost over 40 million rands on that day. Yet, people were, for such a serious crime, they were given only 500 bail. Definitely they'll go back and commit that crime. So that gap we've now closed. The second issue in relation to that is to close the market for these people. Now the police, I think yesterday you saw in the newspapers, I think it was in the Star, where people were stealing cables are now being arrested. And companies that are selling cables are now being raided more frequently as it is, because the law has now been changed. That's where the importance of changing the laws to close some of these gaps are. From the PRASA side, we are now using different kind of cabling so that we move away from copper as much as possible and get stuff that are built underground, so that even if you try, you will not be able to use it again, so that we close the market there. But you know that in Cape Town, particularly on the line to Khayelitsha and Michelle's Plain in Kapstein Klep, we've been having problems there in cable theft. And the truth is that people, then you find that the day they steal this thing, there's someone who's buying it. So we've been trying to close it down. But cable theft has gone down by about 38% in our own environment. It's not a strategy only of PRASA. We're working with Transnet, with Telkom, with the municipalities, and with there's another one, Eskom, Telkom, Transnet, municipalities, and ourselves. And there's what we call the National Crime Combating Forum that the police are driving, which is targeting the elements that are trading in cable theft. But I think change the technology. The world, modern technology allows you to use different kinds of cables, so that we don't attract the people that are using this thing. The other issue is that I want to also say to honourable members that when we look, for example, at the you spoke about the Muha linkage earlier on. I said that when we do the and you recall that both in the, and that's very interesting, and I think possibly the structures in the Eastern Cape may have taken a decision to push very strongly on the rail side. Mm-hmm. There are a number of projects. Remember that Muha is part of, for us, is part of what will be the Motherwell project as it is. So that is very important, because it will not make sense to build only to Motherwell and not extend further in the second phase about that. That is very important. Secondly, Chair, I think I said to the committee that in the last presentation that we did, when you asked that question, Honorable Mlenzani, I said that we are going to do the Umtata-Queenstown connection. We did, and we find that actually there's quite a lot of things. Now we started to shift the resources. We said, let us use that money to close down the, what you call the Kai rail, upgrade it, because currently people travel for long. I mean, you travel on that system for over 8 hours if you are from Umtata to East London and vice versa. So we said we'll upgrade that line so that we can run it at about 130 kilometers, and unlike 30 or 40 is currently the case, so that we can improve on that. But then we also find that the King Williamstown, the Baza, the service, there's an existing line that is standing idle. We then said we'll then upgrade that so that by the end of this year, those are working in addition to that. So we've been paying quite a lot of attention in upgrading that infrastructure so that we can get that right. I agree fully with your view, though, even though I've, at the beginning I've said that we are not the ones who closed the Kokstad in. There is no reason why KwaZulu-Natal, for example, in the south coast, cannot connect with the Eastern Cape, and then Kokstad with the road that has been playing. I pass there on my side, driving there, and I see the railway line standing idle. Both PRASA and Transnet are not utilizing it. So I think that I take that point again, that is something that that needs to be changed. Chair, in conclusion, I want to say, we should not underestimate the importance that a right or correct policy plays in making things to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that this call by the NCOP for an aggressive strategy to address and to connect the rural areas and open up opportunities, I think that is a very important one. You mentioned the meeting in Nelspruit. We never had that meeting only in Nelspruit. We had it in all the 9 provinces. We did it in the Eastern Cape, where we invited the rural people. We started what we call the Women in Rail project. We put R1 billion into that project and said we want, because our rail is dominated by certain companies or people, particularly male, white males, that we needed to have the rural people coming into that. We've had over 2,000 companies submitting different kind of proposals to say we're keen to participate in that. Some of them, we realized that they require that training. And I think that we said at the end of August we'll then make the announcement that is there. So we're being around the country, and I know that in the National Assembly the committee criticized us to say that one of the things we didn't do when we went back on that process, we didn't inform the members of the committee so that the court of guard, and when the public raised questions, they were not in a position. So I think the criticism that we accept, we'll deal with it. But Chair, I'll change in policy. If we don't change policy and legislation, and then you still go and we're told that the rural areas are not important, there's nothing I can do about it. And so I think that is something that we want to work on. I've just said we lost 800 million rands in the last financial year on the long distance side, and we're told you must close it down. And PRASA refused to close it down, and we said we'd rather operate it at a loss. We rather operate at a loss than close it down, because it's a very important link between the urban and rural areas. Now, from a PFMA point of view, Chair, government can take action against me that how do you spend money you don't have? But I said, as a link between the rural and the urban areas, the long distance service is very important. But I'm being told to close it down. So I think these are the things that the committees on transport, both in the NCOP as well as in the National Assembly, should agree on, and then also make a strong case for that one. Chair, we were prepared to go on to tender on the Moloto, and I think that again, there was unhappiness on the part of National Treasury about the 8.7 billion rand. You recall that this project was approved by Cabinet, and in fact, I know that the Eastern Cape, rather the Mpumalanga provincial government, my apologies for that, had
like,
said...
You like the Eastern Cape.
No, it's because Honorable Mlenzana has been pumping me chair, so that my apologies for that. Maybe Mpumalanga and Limpopo should be doing the same with me, so that I can respond with more projects. So, Chair, I think, but the point I was trying to make is that it was approved. They were not happy with certain things in that feasibility, and they forced and prolonged the issue. In the meantime, I think your observation is correct. People continue to die on those buses that are always involved in accidents on the Molot line. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the response. But there's something that I want to say. We are lucky that it's not yet the end of Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela's month, July. So it seems like a magic happened in here, Matthias magic. Because during your response, you made mention of making input to the portfolio committee that things are not okay and that could not listen. So it's a miracle that you said it and we know, and you never knocked on NCOP select committee to make that input. So I'm advising that this parliament has got two houses. It's not portfolio or NA only. Parliament means two houses, NCOP and NA. And we need to know everything. It's our mandate, and we are obliged to implement according to the needs of departments, whatever. Because our duty is to monitor, assess, and do all those things so that development is visible in South Africa from provinces, in provinces. So during the fifth term, please know that there is NCOP that deals direct with all the challenges that you are presenting here. They are genuine, but they are long overdue. That's it.
The response from Mr.
Montana.
You know, the problem that we are having with our government, the departments, they work in silos. Right now we are talking about Plaza. We are talking about Plaza as if Plaza is not part of the Department of Transport. And we are a select committee which also involves Department of Transport. So if there's no synergy, there's nothing wrong of trying to make a call to us, to call the Department of Transport, to raise whatever you want to raise, and also to try to find synergy on how we can assist. So it won't be correct when you are raising this issue to say, no, this is Plaza's issue. But Plaza is part of the Department of Transport. So if you raise it, with us, and we'll raise your concern with the Department of Transport to say these are the things that makes this government not work or this department not work. And whatever the concern that we raise, we'll raise it to the relevant entity. So I think we need to have that kind of a synergy. Let us not work in silos.
Thank you, Honorable Jacob. Thank you, Mr. Montana. Okay, do you want to say something?
Chair, I think I should accept the points that have been made. But I'm not here to complain, Chair. I'm simply saying, and I think that I don't want to talk about the Department of Transport or Transnet. As I said, that Chair, we're working together. You heard in my reply, Chair, I just said I don't know, I want to speak to other agencies. But Chair, one important thing I want to emphasize. Legislation which involves both the National Assembly and the NCOP. It's very important. And I'm saying that these things are not working. Honorable Jacobs, on this particular one, I want actually to insist, and I think that we'll probably debate it. setting up the right legislation to make sure that those goals are achieved is very important. So I'm actually, unfortunately, and without being disrespectful, I want to put the challenge back to the legislature. The reason why we are not delivering on the rural areas is because the framework is not right, and therefore we need to look at the thing. It's not the Department of Transport. It's the legislatures who must look at that particular matter. And I'm not talking about in the next term. As I said, that I'm prepared to come back with the sister companies and even with the Department of Transport so that we can look at whether the strategies were implemented. Mm-hmm. But the key thing is policy and legislation. It's not right, Chair. And that is why I think that it's also the honorable members who must also look at that part and make sure that we adopt a progressive policy that is supportive of the rural areas. Is it doing it now? The answer is a big no.
Thank you, Mr. Montana. We will talk to the chairperson of the Select Committee on Transport, and then we will make sure that we call the relevant departments and the relevant entities, for example, Transnet and yourselves, so that we have all of you in one roof, so that we hear from both sides. And I would also like to say, Mr. Montana, if you can communicate with this committee. For example, the issues that were raised of the companies that are in different provinces that are involved. And also you mentioned 74 schools. If we can get those schools so that during our constituency period we are able to visit those schools and, you know, understand whether they are actually benefiting or they understand what is happening. Also, well, then 19,500 individuals that will be skilled throughout, if we can have that information. As people who are doing oversight, it is important actually to understand whether those people are really benefiting from all corners of South Africa. Honorable Mabija, I think you wanted to say something, but I'm tempted to say, can we close the meeting? Is there something that you wanted to say? Okay, thank you very much, and please let's communicate. Let's communicate in this issue also of policies, because even yourself, Mr. Montana, if you realize that the policies, you don't have to point fingers at the legislators only. You are also a South African. Anybody who sees there's a flaw somewhere can introduce, can say, can we amend such and such a law as a South African? You are free to do that. Thank you. The meeting stands adjourned.
Well, we'll be discussing the time to stop the program, but also the confusion of the community.